celebrating sort of the, or marking the 20th anniversary of the Bob Lazar story, Area 51, S4, flying saucers in government hangars. Also joined by John Lear and Gene Huff. I know a lot of you have questions for this trio, and we'll get right to the phones as soon as we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're in the final hour with Bob Lazar, Gene Huff, John Lear. We're opening the phones in just a moment, Bob. You had said earlier there are a lot of Lazar imposters out there on websites and Facebook and things of that sort. A couple of the listeners had written in saying they were curious about a site they found that had artwork and drawings and things of that sort, whether that you were related to that in any way.
No.
Is that, could that be John Ferret's old site?
Well, that's BobLazar.com. Now, that, yeah, I'm not talking about that site. That's John Ferret, a friend of mine, and he essentially put all the, I don't know what the status is, but he put essentially the bulk of my story online and drew all the graphics concerning the reactor technical aspects. Measurements, that sort of thing, everything that I knew at the time. Now, that's a separate website that I wasn't involved in, but certainly knew about. These other ones, I'm talking about the social network groups, you know, the MySpace, Facebook, that type of thing. None of those have anything to do with me.
Okay, going to the phones, east of the Rockies,
George.
Fred. Yeah. Hello? East of the Rockies, Fred in Florida, are you there?
Fred.
Okay, how about George. West of the Rockies? What were you going to say?
I was going to say that it's important to clarify that what they just heard is that Bob Lazar isn't even involved with BobLazar.com, much less the other website. So that was pretty interesting
right.
statement, actually. Okay, go ahead.
West of the Rockies, 007.5 in Southern Cal. Are you there?
Well, hello, everybody.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing better than ever. This is my birthday, 55 today.
Happy birthday.
Well, thanks. I wanted to tell a true story. In 2001, I was up in the mountain above Palm Springs. They call it Idlewild up there. And one night I was sitting out, couldn't sleep. I was sitting out on a chair in front of my house up there. And a lot of cloud and fog moved in fast and mysteriously that night. And something made me look up at the exact second this big old perfectly round flying saucer came in, and with the lights turned off, I could see it plainly because it came in low enough. And they turned the lights on when they went over my head, and it pulsated white light. Looked like a wheel going around it, inside of it, around the edge of it, probably the propulsion system. I don't know if that would have been magnetic rail thing or whatever it was. It's got to be a lot more advanced than what they got in Area 51. I don't know how much back engineering they've done over there, but anyway, after they went over my head, they turned the lights off, and I heard it land. And a little bit later, all the lights in Idlewild blinked on and off a couple of times. And a little bit later, this strange lady, says her name was Tomorrow, comes down the road, gets a cigarette from me, and as she's leaving, turns and says, "I'll see you tomorrow." Now, from what I've learned from the people from the ship since then, I think they're in the process of doing a roundup to take a load up to their planet. But who's to say this whole planet isn't nothing more than space aliens living on this planet that they originally seeded? Who's to say that isn't true? You know, what it might be. So the question is, could that possibly be true? And basically, message is, if you can do good consistently instead of doing bad, then you're a candidate for rescue. I'd like to know everybody's thoughts on all this, and thanks a lot. I'll hang up now.
John?
Okay. John, you want to tackle that one?
Is John awake?
Am I still awake?
Sorry, John. It's pretty late for you. Did you hear that that question?
Yeah, just give me the base of what it was.
Well, I think he saw a UFO incident and had an encounter with somebody who was a strange lady, and his suggestion was maybe we were seeded here, that aliens seeded the planet.
Yes, that's possible. And the way you get out of here is to exercise integrity without envy and without greed.
Okay.
The secret to success.
Maybe I'll bring it back to you, Bob, and all the material that you read leading up to your introduction to the program. Did you see anything about intent of the visitors or what they want?
I mean, it's my intent as the visitors or what they want. I don't think it was ever made clear what their intent was. Is there information that I saw that might imply that they had something to do with putting people here? Well, possibly. I mean, that's my personal belief. I think to some extent, people were seated in, if you want to call it that, by another civilization. But, it's...
Meaning genetically altered, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you read something about genetic alterations that took place throughout human history, right?
Right. So, I don't know. Is that seeding? I guess in some respect it is. But,
they were doing us the favor, more or less. Wasn't that your perspective? I mean, there was more in it for us than for them, apparently.
That's certainly true.
Wildcard line, Ed in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, George. Fantastic show as per usual. And happy anniversary, 28 years. I am very much a fan of Bob Lazar and John and Gene's work. And I wish that you guys would make the first show available on Coast to Coast, like the interview show that you did on TV, as well as Art's first show. I think it was in 1990, I believe, that Bob Lazar was interviewed on Coast to Coast.
Well, that was a long time ago. I can't believe it's been 20 years myself.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I have a couple questions, and a brief comment. And, oh, my God, where to start? It's quite a privilege and a pleasure to speak to you, Bob.
Well, thank you.
Good luck with your new endeavor with the car inserts or whatever, the hydrogen.
The hydrogen kits. Well, yeah, thanks again for that.
My mom worked for Air Products for 30 years, and my dad, at each picnic, would talk to the president of Air Products and say that he had plans for a hydrogen car when he was fighting in World War II in Brazil.
Really?
With the American soldiers, yeah. And he would tell the president of Air Products every summer at the company picnic, why don't you build a hydrogen car? You wouldn't have to import any more oil. And they said, yeah. And then, like, last year they announced that Air Products is now trying to make their version of a hydrogen car.
Oh, no kidding. Now, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, Air Products, one of the biggest suppliers of gases, industrial gases in the world, and for NASA. Anyway, the other question is, when are you going to make your autobiography? And if so, you could possibly fund even more hydrogen car works. And the other question is, if you were offered to work again for Los Alamos and or somewhere in Area 51, like if they called you up and said, okay, we're sorry, we want you back, would you go? And I have another comment, if I could, please, after that question. Well, the comment is a joke. It was 20 years ago that Joan Rivers said in one of her concerts, that she's in her comedy concert, she said, you know why a UFO never lands in a Jewish lawn? poking fun at herself and my own religion. She said, because they would turn it over to see who manufactured it, see if they can get in on it.
Thanks, Ed.
Like kind of the truth, because they always want to build stuff. And my family, indeed, was involved in manufacturing for years. And it's like a triple entendre joke. But anyway, that's my questions. And good luck. God be with you and all of you. And more power to us all. And hopefully the future will be one of peace and no oil. And lots of hydrogen cars everywhere, not polluting the earth.
I'm all for that.
Thanks, Ed. So, Bob, the central question there is pretty interesting. Would you work for him again? They said, hey, all is forgiven. Come back to S4. We need your help on these saucers.
You know, you won't believe how often I think about this. and that's really a tough question because first of all, I'd apologize to them because they were right. Just keep your mouth closed, you know, and that's the only way to stay here is to go with the flow. And, you know, I am so sorry I made that move. But getting back to the question, yeah, unfortunately, my life has gotten a lot more complicated. I mean, I have several businesses and all that and moved, you know, and wife in Michigan. However, if we can put all that stuff on hold, or if I was just single again without attachments to other businesses and all that, would I go back? Yeah, in a heartbeat. I really would.
Bob, I need to ask a question. You spoke before about one of the problems with hydrogen cars is detecting the leakage because there's no odorants involved with the hydrogen. And, of course, as you know, they pretty much proved that the reason the Hindenburg lit up like it did was because of the aluminum doping on the skin,
right,
and not the
hydrogen
itself. How explosive is hydrogen? You said, well, if a cubic foot of hydrogen leaked out, I mean, does it catch on fire that easily? How dangerous is it? How explosive is hydrogen?
Well, a cubic foot isn't really that dangerous. It burned in air, and it does have a wide range of flammability. But
it's got
to
be contained, right?
The real problem here is overcoming the stigma of hydrogen. When you mention hydrogen to people, they're only going to think of two things: the Hindenburg or a hydrogen, thermonuclear bomb. And both of them are bad news. So it's tough overcoming that. The actual dangers are very minimal, and a gasoline car by far is the bomb that you're driving, not a hydrogen car.
I want to go back to sort of the implication of Ed's question there and your interesting answer that you would actually think about going back and wish you had stayed in the program. Could you imagine, or have you thought it out about where it would be now, what your role would be if you'd stayed in it, how far the research would have progressed?
Well, if things would have gone a lot smoother and we wouldn't have had the security problems that popped up and, if things remained under control, is it possible that we would have made more progress? I don't know. Who knows how many people before me tried to make the identical progress that I was trying to do. I focused on what I was primarily interested in and, what our group was directed to do. But I certainly don't see why I would have made a giant difference. Basically what I'm saying, in this amount of time, we'd probably be about the same place they are now. I don't think I had any special abilities or any I can't think of the word to say, but
well, you know what? We're just guessing. I mean, maybe they made a breakthrough. Maybe that statement out of the guy from Lockheed is more telling than we know, that they have figured it out by now.
It's possible, but I have no reason to think that I could have been a major contributor, any more than any other person there. So that's hard to say.
But then Ben Rich says, who used to run the Lockheed Skunk Works, says that it's locked up in Black Project and it would take an act of God for it to ever be used for any public purpose. So what that indicates to me, they're probably talking about they're going to keep it for weapons and military, defense or offense purposes, whatever, but it's never going to, be disclosed and given to the public for any benefit.
It's a crime, but if they're not going to let the people know about it, I sure want to know. I just have a craving to to get back into where I was, and I know that's impossible, but I do think about it all the time. It's kind of like, that annoying feeling you have.
What if?
Yeah, exactly. It's a what if that never goes away, and I really don't know how to describe it, but it bothers me a lot because there are times I said, well, no, I'd never go back. This is ridiculous. But really, as time goes on, and now I'm over 50, you start thinking different, and boy, if things were as they were back then, I would jump right back into it. Nowadays, with the, like I said, the way my life is, it'd be impossible.
Do you think if you had stayed quiet and not gone public, they yanked your clearance and you were temporarily out of the program. If you had just shut up and
well, that had to
you
do
were
with
told,
Tracy, not with me.
Right, but I'm just saying, if you had done as you were told and stayed quiet and not gone public, do you think they would have rehired you? Would they have called you back after a layoff?
I don't know.
We're going to go to Blair in Sedona, Arizona on the wild card line. Good morning, Blair.
Thank you, George. Hey, Mr. Lazar, speaking of gravity propulsion, George had a gentleman by the name of Channon on his October 25th show who said frequency patterns hold the planets in place, not gravity.
And frequency patterns of what?
Well, there you go. I guess you got to define exactly what he means there.
I mean, maybe it's the frequency patterns of a gravitational wave.
Ah.
But, I mean, you have to be a frequency of some energy, and maybe that's, you know, what he was referring to, that it's not a static wave, that it's an active, and he would be right. It's if he's talking about frequency of gravitational waves, I guess that's a correct statement.
Would you be able to speculate on a post-government disclosure society, and what specifically and how will the current suppressed technologies of unlimited power enhance American life, those leaps and bounds you were talking about?
So the effects of letting it all out.
Yeah.
Well, and how would that change our lives directly? A lot of that would depend on exactly how far they were able to take this, because if they really can't duplicate it, then it's useless to everybody. And if it just remains that the craft or components of other crafts they have are the only working pieces of that technology, and it can't be made to work with Earth technology, there's no use at all. It just is a novelty. However, if they were able to surpass that and able to duplicate some of the technology, some of the ideas, or even, you know, some of the basic concepts using Earth materials, sure, there could be, it could be a world-changing event. There could be sources of energy that are limitless. But, again, using alien materials requires a source for those alien materials, and I don't know of any Earth materials that could be substituted or that perform like the ones we were looking at. So I don't see where the project really would have proceeded, but I didn't know everything about it. I just knew the small amount of information that they dealt out to my group, and I'm sure I don't have anything close to a big picture. So
you'd have to think that if they had the stuff, they spent all these years trying to figure it out, and they were just stumped, that they'd just bury it somewhere. They wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't let it out. They wouldn't want any of our adversaries to know about its potential.
Oh, they'd
because
never
somebody
do
else.
That. They'd never do that. They'd tinker with it forever. They'd never just bury it and throw it away because just on the outside hope that a new young upstart comes in somewhere, has some neat idea, and now finally they have access to all this power and technology. They're never going to throw it on the back shelf. It's their prized possession. They're never just going to throw it in a box and do, one of the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing and some giant,
Not to mention that those who brought it here were supposed to come back another time, so they would probably at least keep it and hope that happened.
Gentlemen, we're taking another break. We'll come back with our guests, Bob Lazar, Gene Huff, and John Lear, if he's still with us there. Stay with us. We'll go to more of your calls after these breaks and messages on Coast to Coast AM. We are joined tonight by a couple of UFO maniacs, Bob Lazar, Gene Huff, John Lear, talking about Area 51. And in a way, it's a story that launched 1,000 businesses, posters and ashtrays and T-shirts and even Bob Lazar Christmas ornaments, books, tours, video games, bars named Area 51, bands named Area 51. There's a band named Element 115, in case Bob Lazar has never heard of that one. A lot of people have made a lot of money on the story, Bob Lazar and Gene Huff and John Lear not being among them. However, a lot of interest continues. When we come back, we'll go back to the phones, get to as many of your questions as we can here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're in the home stretch with Bob Lazar, John Lear, Gene Huff, going to east of the Rockies, Glenn in Texas. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd just like to say this is a wonderful experience, and what a forum Art created. I have a question for Mr. Lazar, and if I may, a quick question for Mr. Lear.
Go for it.
Mr. Lazar, did the craft at S4 have any landing gear? And if so, what kind of configuration? It may help with the speculation on the specific use or general use. And Mr. Lear?
Yeah.
I grew up here in Harlingen, Texas with the CAF. And is the ride in a souped-up A-26 a body-numbing experience or something? Even so, you just don't want to get out of. Thank you, and I'll listen on the air.
John, why don't you start first?
Okay, what was his question?
He was talking about a ride in an A-26, if it was a body-numbing experience.
Oh, I don't know. I had a lot of time in the airplane, but it was not a body-numbing experience.
So you're not a big fan of that plane?
Oh, yeah, it's a great airplane. Yeah, I loved it. You know, in 1968, I was the first guy ever to fly in the Reno Air Races and actually placed fifth. I had a B-51 in the B-26.
Okay.
I was five. When John was in that race, George, we were five.
Bob, you're part of that question.
Did the craft have any landing gear? No, not that I was aware of. Anytime I saw the craft, it was on its belly or lifted off the ground, but I didn't see any landing gear, and I did get to look in the lower portion of the craft. The only thing that's down there are the gravity emitters, you know, the amplifiers, if you will. There's no room anywhere for any kind of landing gear, so I imagine they're always counting on the craft lifting itself off the ground or sitting on its belly, but there's nothing that stands it off the ground.
Bob, the bottom of the craft where the when it would turn up on its side and they'd focus the gravity amplifiers on a point, did you know is the bottom of that open? Does something open? Is it made of something else, or is it all the same continuous?
No, the very bottom of it's flat under the amplifiers there.
But it's solid?
It's not. It's not open. Yeah, it's solid.
Okay, it's same as the rest of the skin of the craft.
I don't know. It appeared the same, but okay. If the material was different, I wouldn't know.
Keeping with Glenn's question, when they're in the hangars, these things, you saw nine different craft in the hangars. Were they suspended like ropes or cables or something?
Sitting on their belly, with the exception of the one that was tilted up that had the hole in it that I mentioned. Looks like a projectile had been fired through it.
Okay. West of the Rockies, Mark in San Diego. Good morning, Mark.
Hi. By the way, my favorite three guests. I'd like to ask each of them how this has affected them on a religious level, like if they were raised a Catholic, and has this had any effect on their religious beliefs, as in, like, afterlife or a supreme being?
Gene, why don't we start with you on that?
Absolutely. I mean, the difference between Bob and I is that he is interested in the technology and the hardware, and, of course, you know, from what I've heard him say on this show tonight, he's changing now that he's over 50. But the impetus for me and the whole thing were the basic questions of man. Who are we? Where'd we come from? Where are we going to? Life after death? God? The things that none of us are exempt from. And if these gray aliens or whomever brought these craft here had any commentary on any of that, I would like to know what they had to say. So, yeah, I've given a great deal of thought to that, and Bob did not used to think about it at all. I don't know if he does now or not, but it completely changed my life. By the way, Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, also he said that when he was on the moon looking back at the earth, it was tough to see where heaven was, and it kind of changed him philosophically also. It was a life-changing experience standing on the surface of the moon and looking back at the earth. So I guess all of us have different times in our life that make us examine our mortality and try and grasp whatever we can to get answers. But yeah, the material Bob brought forward was certainly changed my life and changed me a lot philosophically.
And Bob, do you think of it in a spiritual or philosophical way? Any differences?
No, I mean, I'm not the most spiritual person you'll
I'm not
into.
Either.
You know, I really, if anything, I'm anti-religion. I think organized religion is probably the worst thing that's ever happened to civilization. But, sorry, that's the way I believe. It creates all the wars, and I don't even want to get into it. But you can be spiritual and, you know, not be involved in mainstream religion. You know, is there a God? You know, who knows the answer to these questions? But, you know, did it affect me? No, because I really didn't have any religious beliefs. You know, I believe there is some order to the universe. I don't think when you die, that's it. Although, you know, science-wise, it tells me that's all that happens is life and death. But you know, you just have those other feelings inside you that have no basis or facts to follow. But I really wasn't religious before that. And after being exposed to it, it really didn't change anything or my beliefs.
Hey, John Lear, did not only the Area 51 revelations, but the larger UFO picture change your philosophy of life or change the way you look at the universe or eternity after that?
Changed everything, because now I know exactly what's going on and how it works.
Wow.
So you're going to write another, you're going to write a religious text and let us all know?
Probably not. There are very few that really know this or that would understand it or that would care.
And are you optimistic in general?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's something. First-time caller, PJ, Santa Maria, California. Hi, PJ.
Hey, good morning, guys. It is a pleasure talking to all of you guys. And a question is for John Lear this morning. And, John, I'm curious with the lunar water findings as of the last couple of days, and I understand that having followed all three of you guys there for the last decade or so and, you know, researching on what you've talked about with structures on the moon and obviously a lot of features that would have to be man-made or made somewhere on there. What do you think with what NASA is doing? Do you think they're slowly starting to disseminate information about things up there? Is it a new finding to them that there is water there, or do you think they knew this from a long time ago?
They probably knew there was some long time ago because they had a lot of pictures on the on both the near side and far side. There's cities, waters, lakes, rivers, anything you want. The other day we managed to catch a spectacular picture where the holograph of Endymion, which is a crater at the top of the moon about 1 o'clock, somehow the holograph or whatever hides it went away for just a few minutes. And a friend of mine had a telescope aimed right at it and was able to draw what is really at Endymion. It was a fascinating experience, and he came to Las Vegas, and we went over it, and we drew it many, many times until we got it exactly right.
What was there?
It was a city with buildings and towers, and it's hidden by holographic nature.
Boy, that sounds so crazy to me. I can't even relate to you.
John is back.
Yeah.
So much for the sane John. No, we're poking fun, John, but you're saying that there's all this stuff up there that's covered by holographic technology of some sort.
Oh, yeah. The whole darn place is covered.
Just to keep it secret from us?
Yeah, pretty much to keep it secret from us.
We're going to go to the wild card line, Chez in New York City. Good morning, Chez.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm an avid follower of you and all your guests. And
thanks.
I had a couple of questions for Bob. Bob, I was wondering, I know it's been a while, but I was wondering if you could speak to any sort of description or detail as it relates to the skin of any of these crafts. That was my first question. My second question was, is there anything of sort of an innocuous nature, something odd or bizarre that you could remember about any sort of compartments or support facilities for some of these occupants or pilots of the craft?
I didn't have any knowledge of anything along those lines as far as the occupants of the craft or anything to do with biology.
Well, he's talking about compartments inside the craft. I mean, you did get a look inside there, right? The furniture?
Compartments inside. Yeah, maybe I misunderstood the question.
Right.
Yeah, compartments inside the craft. I did get to inspect everything in the craft with the exception of the very upper level, which I believe was just navigation and their version of electronics. But it didn't look like there was anything but open space. There were three seats for the occupants of the craft, but there were no individual rooms, compartments, or what have you, like we might have on one of our, any form of transportation. There's nothing like a bathroom or a smaller area. Everything is just, each level is completely open in itself, so I wouldn't call anything a compartment anywhere.
The other part of that question he asked about was the skin. Did it have skin or is it just metallic?
Well, I called it metal, and again, each part of the research done is, as it gets late, my brain begins to run out of words. But, it's all very compartmentalized, and the people that dealt with the metallurgy were a completely different group of people. I had no knowledge of it. The only light I can shine on it is the one time I walked across the craft and just slid my hand along it. It was cold, and that's the only reason I said it felt like metal. It was, cooler than the ambient air. Could it have been some exotic ceramic or something? Probably so. I'm sure it wasn't just an alloy of aluminum or anything along those lines. But that's about all I know about it. It was a pewter gray in color, as was everything on the inside and outside of the craft. So that's about all I can say as far as what the material was.
Chaz, thanks for the call. We're going to go to Jim in Chicago. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, George.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I got a problem with my phone here. Anyway, I like your style because I'm also a bottom line guy. I have a question for Mr. Lazar. I want to know about the alien bodies. Has he seen them? And in his opinion, are they biological? Are they semi-biological or perhaps interdimensional?
I haven't personally seen an alien. I did see a photograph of a creature. Was that creature in the craft or, a pilot of the craft? I was just given some information, a brief overview of other portions of research being done. But, again, I had no direct information about any of the biological aspects of...
Well, you saw vivisectioned and weighed.
Yeah, but like I said, I was given briefings that, well, as you know, portions of reports on many of the other areas, but I had no specific information on how that creature that I saw, or the images of the creature, if that had anything, in fact, to do with the craft. You see what I'm saying?
But you did, the pictures that you did see, the vivisection or autopsy-like photos showed organs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a central organ as opposed to, and I think that's what the comments were underneath it, that from their estimation, I think I gave the description as if you had taken all our organs and allowed them all to grow together. It was one single organ in the body that they had cut in a T-shaped fashion, looking at the different chambers and whatnot in there. And I think it's this organ-looking thing was apparently performing many functions.
So it appeared to be biological to you in the photos.
Yeah, so exactly. It didn't appear to be an interdimensional being, I don't know. Can an interdimensional being appear to be biological? So that's all I can say.
Well, didn't you get a glimpse of something in a lab coat?
Yeah, oh boy, people make a big deal about that thing.
Well, and rightfully so. I mean.
No, I don't think that was an alien, no.
Just a short person with a big gray head, or?
No, I didn't say anything about a big gray head.
I'm just
the other side of the coin is that they could have been playing mind games, so they had two scientists in lab coats stand next to a facsimile of a kid, a gray alien,
A lot was going on at that time because I saw, again, this was their, you know, backs are to me, and they were playing with something or looking at something that size. Maybe they were making up a little mannequin or something to see how it would fit inside the craft, but I had no indication that that thing was alive or
right.
What was going on, so I can never say that.
But neither did they know you would be walking down the hall to go to the bathroom and look through that window.
Yeah, but I wouldn't try and read too much into that. That would be too much speculation.
Okay.
Going to try to take one more call. Got to be a quick one. Gary in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Quick question.
Well, more of a statement.
Okay.
In 1966, I was the youngest person working for an electronics company who delivered projects to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is now NASA. And normally I was kept out of the loop as to what they did, but this one particular time I walked through a door that I wasn't supposed to, and there on the easel, by an illustrator who was incredible by the name of Glenn Hawk, was the space shuttle, 1966. It did not fly till 1981. So this suppression of information has been going on for eons.
Well, point well taken. And I think Bob and John and Gene are sort of examples of what our knowledge is of suppression of this kind of technology. Nice. Any closing comments from our guests, Bob? Anything you want the listeners to know about what's next for you or what this strange journey has been like?
Well, the strange journey has really been something. Certainly has taken my life in directions I never thought it would. I do constantly get people that are, you know, really wanting to ask me questions, even people doing research and looking for, actually even in a couple instances, some research labs that are looking at advanced propulsion and just looking for some possible insight. And I apologize for not getting back to everybody, but if you do want to contact me, just be patient. And the only place is our website at the email
UnitedNuclear.com.
Well,
right.
Sales at UnitedNuclear.com, or just go to our website and buy some stuff.
All right. Bob Lazar, Gene Huff, John Lear, thanks for staying up late with us. It was fascinating. Next Sunday, JFK Roundtable. Hope you can join us then. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone.